Episode 149 von Win Today Hockey O'Clock. Tom Rowe, Head Coach, Nürnberg Ice Tigers.
The two big differences, the DEL is more north-south, North American style. You know, it's fast, physical at times, and all four lines can play. So we have four lines tonight, and we'll play them probably as close to equal minutes as possible. Those are the two big areas, is we have four lines that can play. I found in Austria, most teams had their top two lines would compete in this league as good as anybody, because Rick Schofield came in here and scored 13 goals in like 37 games. And I knew he was going to do it because he's such a good hockey player. And, you know, a couple people say, but he was in the Austrian league. I said, I don't care if he was in the Chinese league. I said, this guy can play hockey. And everybody found out real quick. So the top two lines in Austria from every team could play in this league, I don't think without a problem. It's the depth.
Win today, hockey. O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird's jetzt richtig hitzig. Und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur der Ball.
Das ist unglaublich, was die vier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
Oh,
it's
gone. Oh, what a goal. It doesn't get any better than this.
It is the last day of October, and it's already the highlight of the current podcast season, the current season of Win Today Hockey O'Clock. It is indeed happening. Opposite of me, a dear friend of the podcast, so good to see you in person, is, of course, Nürnberg Ice Tigers head coach Tom Rowe. So glad that you're doing this.
Yeah, great to see you in person. We've been doing this by video every other time, but no, it's always good to see you, always good to talk to you.
It's been indeed a couple of years. It's already been a couple of years that you're head coaching the Nürnberg Ice Tigers. We're at the quarter mark of the DEL season so far. We're going to use this conversation to enlighten a lot of people in Austria about the quality of hockey in the DEL, about some other teams, and of course, the Ice Tigers. But after 15 games that have been played so far, what's your assessment of the season the Ice Tigers are having?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're three games under 500, but we really don't worry about that right now. The thing we came into training camp talking about is compete as hard as you possibly can. Know what your job is within our systems and, you know, make sure that our young guys keep developing in the right direction. So compared to last year, our record is pretty close, if not identical. But I do think we're ahead of last year because of the pace we're playing at. I think the young kids that we gave a lot of ice time to last year are really starting to produce this year, which has been great. And then we've got Roman Kechter playing for us more full-time this year than he did last, and he's coming along nicely. And then we just started dressing a 17-year-old by the name of Max Merkel, who's being scouted heavily by the National Hockey League, and he's had to jump right in to play some serious minutes. So I think to this point, we're very happy with the development and obviously not thrilled with the record. But like I've told the guys, the work ethic has been there from day one. So pucks will start bouncing more our way than they have been. And we'll get back on the winning track. But, you know, we got some guys out, but we've always said we're never using that as an excuse. We expect the guys who are healthy to go in and do the job and get it done.
Now, everybody knew the day would come, the year would come, where there's no Patrick Reimer anymore. And so many organizations on this hockey planet have had to go through it. How do you replace an icon? Obviously, you can't replace someone like Patrick Reimer, but there's a void in terms of quality of play. There's a void in terms of leadership. How did you approach the building of this team in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're not going to replace Patrick. He's the leading scorer in the history of the league, right? So you're never going to replace that, at least not right away. You know, I think Stefan Ustorf did a really good job going out finding some imports for us that have an offensive flair to their game. And we kind of are doing it by committee. We got two power play units that are producing for us, which is nice. So we're just hoping, again, like the young guys, we want them to step up and score a little bit more this year. We think that'll help us replace some of his points. And as far as the leadership goes, we were a really tight team last year. We might even be a little tighter this year, but it's the Patrick Ryans of the world and Ole Miebus, Blake Parlett, Andrew Bodnichuk that helped lay the foundation for our culture that we're currently in for the guys who were here. So all the young guys saw how all they prepared last year for games and practices, and that's carried on. So Patrick's influence has been obviously very, very important, and I think it's a legacy that'll always live here, and guys obviously will always remember him. But again, the offensive piece, you're never going to replace that.
You already touched base on a couple of other people that left the club and big personalities. Oliver Miebus, who had left a huge imprint here with Nuremberg, Gregor MacLeod, his scoring, of course, hard to replace. Knowing that there are so many high-profile players that either retired or left the club, did you approach this kind of team building period and this camp differently than others?
Yeah, I definitely did. We, and like I said, we talked, we had five different meetings on culture, and we really stressed don't worry about the results, don't worry about wins, losses, goals, all that stuff. I think guys put way too much pressure on themselves when they do that. I mean, that being said, we expect to win, and the guys know that. But we said, we want you to come in and work as hard as you possibly can, not just in the games, but in practice as well. So if anybody watches our practice, and we've had a couple of former players and current coaches in the league comment on how hard we practice, and then a couple of them said, you guys practice like that all the time. And players said, yeah, it's every day, but you get so used to it, it's easy to do, and then it carries over into the games. So it's just what we started. I wouldn't say it's just me. It's the philosophy of me, Stefan Ustorf, Manuel Kofler, and all the players have bought in 100%. So that's what's helping us survive and get some points and, you know, and get through this tough stretch that we're on right now.
Culture in hockey is such an interesting word, because obviously everybody wants to have a certain culture, but only very few teams are able to really get it right. And you've had to start from scratch with many teams before. You were in different situations. How has your term culture evolved over the years?
It's a great question. Told you you're the best questioner
again
in hockey.
There are many good ones out there too.
I guess how it's evolved is probably when I was in my 30s and mid 40s, maybe all my 40s, I was very, very hard on guys to the point of maybe being too hard and I'd lose them. And it would take us probably a few weeks or a month to get them back. So I've really backed off personally on not pushing too hard. You still have to hold everybody accountable, and players want the accountability and they want the discipline, even though they may complain about it at the time. At the end of the day, you know, they don't want to be in a country club. So what I do now is really lay out the plan on how we're going to have a positive culture. And it's starting, I've told them from day one, it starts in the gym. If you're not in shape, can't play. And you definitely can't play for us with the style that we like to play. And then the second piece, and I told Manuel when I first got here, is we need to have really good relationships with the players. And they need to know that we care about them. They need to know that we're here to help them. They also know that they're going to be held accountable. But if they know you respect them as players and as people, and probably people first, players second, then I think they'll run through the wall for you. You know, Roddy Brind'Amour does it in Carolina probably better than anybody in hockey. And those players there, you know, will run through the wall for him. So, you know, it's not real difficult. It's just communication and making sure the players know you care about them. And in Germany, it's and it was the same way in Austria. If a North American coach comes in, the first thing that country's players want to see, okay, is he going to treat the North American players one way and then the Austrians, the German players another way? And I told everybody from day one in Austria and Germany, I said, I don't care if you're an import, I don't care if you're a German or an Austrian, everybody's going to get treated the same. So I think when you can create that and the players see that it's true, then everybody buys in.
An interesting point that you mentioned, and obviously all the teams, all the hockey pro teams of this world go to training camp, and you kind of expect them, your players, to show up in shape. You told, or you said, it all starts in the gym. Is it possible to say on day one that someone had a good summer and that someone reported out of shape to the camp?
Oh, yeah, easy. Yeah, we do. Christian Bachman does all our conditioning tests. He's our conditioning coach. And our mark was nobody could come in at 12% or higher body fat. And everybody did come in under 12%, except for some of the new imports who we signed late in the summer who didn't know what we were all about. And, you know, they came in and not in the shape they should have been. But, you know, we don't scold them and yell at them and, you know, put them in the doghouse. We just tell them, listen, this is the plan we've got in place for you. You're not going to get your body fat down overnight, but you do need to get it down. But you also got to play hockey for us and help us, you know, be a successful franchise. So the old days of, you know, putting somebody in the stands because they're not in shape or they've done something bad are over. And we like to teach and explain more what our philosophy is. And the guys who did come in late, that Uzdi had signed late in the summer, are already in a lot better shape than they were. But those players, if they're back next year, we'll see better results from them next season because they'll know what to expect. And everybody who didn't meet the high elite level of conditioning last year all came back this year in that condition. So that's why we're able to play the style we do.
Now, this goes very much into the sports science, nutritional aspect of things. Before coming over here full-time as a Nuremberg head coach, you took a sabbatical. Long-time listeners of this program know that you read a lot, that you try to follow up on different approaches, you wrapped your head around analytics. How has your approach, like in overseeing a huge hockey operations with all the different aspects, changed here in Nuremberg compared to maybe jobs that you had 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah, well, First Beat is a software that the players wear a heart rate monitor, and it tracks everything that they're doing from their heart rate. So we can tell when somebody's being overworked, and we can tell when somebody's body's about to break down and more open to injuries or flu and things like that. So we really take load management, which I think has been a real big thing the last 5 or 6 years in pro sports in general. So there'll be days where we have certain guys come out for practice and they can only practice for 20 minutes and we kick them off because that's really all they need. Or there'll be days where we'll tell 8 or 9 guys, like yesterday, we had 9 guys stay off the ice just because they've been getting so much ice time in game. So that's the biggest difference. You know, the analytics, I've always been into analytics, even before, you know, analytics
before
was analytics.
Before it probably was called analytics, I just wanted to say.
And but now we're really focused on the load management piece of it. We just don't want to overtrain guys, and they need to get enough rest to recover, and that's really what we focus on. We have no more pregame skates. Pregame skates are out. It's just a waste of energy for the guys for 15-minute skate, but you add that all up over the course of a season, and that's a lot of energy that they could be using in the games.
You touched upon an interesting point, and it's something that we talk about a lot in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League too, as it's well known that it's a bus league. Teams hardly ever fly to destinations. And what we as broadcasters probably factor in not nearly enough is when teams are getting back from long road trips, that they are maybe back on Saturday morning, 5 a.m., and they have to play Sunday again at 5 p.m. How does travel, how does a road schedule factor in on your load management?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. And when we get back at 5 o'clock, obviously we're not going to practice on a Saturday. We'll bring them in Sunday, and we just get them in the gym, loosen up lightly, and you know, we don't put them on the ice, especially if it's an afternoon game. But the travel's not that bad, even if you are getting back at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, because the nutrition is critical, and all the guys pay attention to their nutrition, which helps their body recover. And I would think, you know, I know most of them get good amount of rest, And, you know, the ones who struggle sleeping, you know, we probably track them as close as anybody on that software to make sure they do get enough rest. So that's why there are some days there's only 8 or 9 guys practicing. And right, especially now because it's such a heavy schedule. When we have a normal schedule and it's just Friday or Sunday, and then we don't play till the next weekend, then obviously everybody's practicing at that time.
I had a look at your October, and it's an interesting month for several reasons it's been an interesting month for the Ice Tigers for several reasons. But you played 7 games on the road, only 4 at home. Tonight will be the 4th one against the league-leading Eisbären Berlin. How tough was October, considering the huge amount of injuries that you had to?
Yeah, I mean, October wasn't too bad, actually. We didn't win on the road at all, but I thought we played well. You know, typical early season mistakes that hurt us in a lot of games. But it was only the game in Frankfurt that we really played poorly. All the other games, I thought we had a chance to win every night. I would say this stretch that we're on right now, these last 5 or 6 games, it's been against the top teams in the league. And that's just been one after another, and we're not through with them yet. We play Berlin tonight, we play Wolfsburg on Sunday, and that would probably be, I think, 6 games in a row where we're playing top 6 teams. What's been difficult is we got 6 regulars out, and we have them out anywhere from a month to 4 months. So that's been taxing as anything, and even that, we've been able to stay in games. We haven't really gotten blown out. I mean, we lost 6-2 to Mannheim, but it certainly wasn't a 6-2 game. I mean, we were right there. We're not giving up a lot of shots. We go to Munich on Sunday, lose that game, but we kept them under 30 shots and we had plenty of chances. Just seems like the teams with the experience, when they get their chances, they're finishing them, and we're having a little bit of struggle finishing our chances.
You already touched on the injuries, the injury bug that has really hit the Nuremberg Ice Tigers. You brought in some weakened reinforcement on defense because you were playing so shorthanded. How difficult has it been dealing with the injuries?
Well, it's always hard, but like I said to you earlier, we hate using it as an excuse, so we're never going to use it as an excuse. We look at it as more of a positive, because Kechter's going to get more minutes, Max Merkel's going to get more minutes, Justus Buettner has gotten 16, 17 minutes a night. So we kind of want to look at that part of it and just weather the storm. You know, we can get through this phase like we did last year, and then we get all those guys back. I think we're going to be a stronger team because we're able to give the young kids a lot of minutes. And those young kids were getting minutes anyway. Even when we were healthy, if they were in the lineup, they were playing and playing quite a bit, especially the forwards.
Now, Nuremberg is a team with a long tradition, obviously in the German hockey realms, in the German hockey league. But after losing their main sponsor a couple of years ago, obviously the big bucks are going to be earned elsewhere. And I read an article in the local paper, Ice Hockey News, a couple days ago, and there your manager, Stefan Ustorf, said, well, our budget doesn't necessarily let us bring in talent where other teams are able to reload at this point in time. We all know might a club or two that they go through, okay, which former NHL defenseman is currently available because they do have the money. I don't want to push you in the direction where it's frustrating, but how difficult is it seeing other teams constantly reloading and trying to stay uber competitive where you have to kind of have a defenseman for a weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah, we look at that and, you know, we do get a little frustrated with how teams can reload at the drop of a hat. But, you know, I think in hockey, especially in hockey, I think everything starts with your habits. If you have good playing habits, good stick, don't turn your back on the puck. You can beat anybody any night, and we've proven it. The only team we have a real difficult time with in their building is Mannheim. You know, we've beaten them here a couple of times. We've beaten Red Bull. Ingolstadt, cleaned our clock for 2.5 years, and we went in there the other night and beat them. So that was a good boost for our guys. But yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is we're a low budget team, right? So we're not going to cry about it. And Manuel and myself, we actually sit here laughing when we see Mannheim just side Tyler Ennis, who's got over 1,000 games or close to it. Straubing gets Brown from the NHL. He played over 1,000 games. So, you know, it is what it is. And I think when we beat those teams with those guys in the lineup, it's even sweeter for us.
Might just happen tonight. Again, leading Eisbären guesting today in Nuremberg playing the Ice Tigers. This conversation will come out the day after, so we don't know what will happen tonight. So listeners out there, please excuse that we can't talk about the Eisbären game yet. But I want to talk a little bit about the season and especially some interesting occurrences with your team. You're 5-1 at home. Obviously, not so good on the road, but what makes the Ice Tigers so tough to beat here?
I think it's the way we work and compete. You know, we obviously have a lot of energy. Tonight's probably going to be close to 6,000 people in the building, so the guys definitely feed off of that. What we're trying to get our guys to do is play the same game on the road. We seem to sit back a little bit too much sometimes and a little too tentative and don't play with the same aggression as we do at home. So I would say that's the biggest thing. Obviously, everybody's comfortable in their own home building. So that is probably the biggest reason. We just got to take that same mentality on the road and start winning on the road.
What does it say about your team that you're the only team in the German Hockey League that hasn't gone to OT yet this season?
Yeah.
And it's a fairly big sample size.
Yeah, no, I know. I don't know if it's a coincidence or what it is. It seems like we get a lead, we're doing a better job of protecting those leads this year. And then when we're behind, we're getting timely goals, especially at home. But I don't know. It's nice to collect all 3 points and not give any points away. So I'm hoping it can keep going. But I think at the end of the day, it's the competitiveness that we play with, and you'll see it tonight. We may not play great systems every night, but we do work. And if I hear from every single coach that we play against.
People on Winter Day Hockey O'Clock have come to know you as an educator. Every time I listen to you, I come away smarter regarding the game of hockey, and I want to make sure that goes for the listeners too. And this time around, I thought, and I've been hearing this question so often that I thought you'd be the perfect person to solve this once and not forever, but for the time being. The differences between the Ice Hockey League and the German Hockey League, because obviously we're always looking at the German Hockey League, great arenas, full stands, not always the case in Austria, but we're getting there. The quality of play, some people, and the Champions Hockey League is a league where teams do compete. Some fans in Austria do think that their team might have a shot in the German Hockey League, which might be the case for 1.5, 2 programs at the very least. But if you had to compare those two leagues, what are the major differences? How do you compare and contrast them?
Yeah, I mean, the two big differences, the DEL is more north-south, North American style. You know, it's fast, physical at times, and all four lines can play. So we have four lines tonight, and we'll play them probably as close to equal minutes as possible. And those are the two big areas, is we have four lines that can play. I found in Austria, most teams had their top two lines would compete in this league as good as anybody, because Rick Schofield came in here and scored 13 goals in like 38 games, 37 games. And I knew he was going to do it because he's such a good hockey player. And, you know, a couple people say, yeah, but he was in the Austrian league. I said, I don't care if he was in the Chinese league. I said, this guy can play hockey. And everybody found out real quick. So the top two lines in Austria from every team could play in this league, I don't think without a problem. It's the depth. And even German hockey, they want to develop more players, and Austria wants to do the same thing. They want to develop more players. And that's why we really focus on making sure we play the young kids as much as we can.
Now, I wanted to use this opportunity to talk about a couple of teams, obviously some teams with Austrian ties. It's your third year as a head coach in the German Hockey League. How firm of a grasp regarding all the teams, the league, do you think you got?
Yeah, now really good. Yeah, I'm not surprised by anybody. You pretty much, even when they change coaches, you kind of know what style they're going to play. You know how hard certain buildings are to play in. Our guys get all fired up going to Munich. We struggle in Mannheim because of the size of the building, the size of that team. I think it's more the skill and how much talent that team has in Mannheim, and that's a mental block we have to get over, because every other building we go into, we're not too worried about going into, and we know we can win there. I'm real comfortable with the league at this point.
Before we start to dissect a couple of the teams that you're regularly facing, and I have to say, after 15 games, you've played each and every team at the very least once, so you've already seen them this year too. But one thing that you need to work out or solve for me too, would it be a fair assessment to say if you're on an upwards trajectory as a player, especially an import player, it's very likely that you might go from the Ice Hockey League to the German Hockey League. Mm-hmm. And if you're starting to decline or are already declining, it's very likely that you're probably going from the DEL to the Ice Hockey League.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you see that happening more and more. I know we had a couple of players this year that couldn't get contracts in the DEL. They ended up, well, Blake Parlett, not that he can't play in the league anymore, but, you know, there weren't any teams willing to sign him, unfortunately, and he ended up in Bolzano, which is not a bad thing. It's
Jason
a great
Nickerson.
League. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely happening, and I'm glad to see more Austrian players coming into this league and having success, because I think it's a really good league, and we can find really good players in that league, especially teams like us who don't have big budgets. You know, you have Bradley playing for Straubing, who was in Vienna, and then Rick Schofield came in here, and he did an unbelievable job for us. So, yeah, it's definitely players going back and forth.
The Winter Day Ice Hockey League always, or very least some organizations, always considered themselves being stepping stone organizations, and just seeing someone like Nick Mattinen having the success that he had last year in Villach and now coming into Straubing being a point per game scorer, leading them in scoring.
Yeah.
Not too bad. So obviously our league can't play.
And not by mistake. I mean, legitimately, I mean, that shot he's got is unbelievable. It's an NHL shot. And we pre-scouted them on, you know, our penalty killing systems, and he still scored against us. But now I'm happy, because I loved my time in Austria, and I am happy to see guys coming from the Austrian league to this league.
I want to talk to you about five or six teams that might be of interest to Austrian listeners too, that are of course of interest for German listeners who listen to this program. And it starts with the leading Berlin Eisbären. Doesn't matter what happens tonight, they'll still lead the standings after or on Wednesday when this podcast comes out. They're still being coached by Serge Aubin, fifth year now. He, of course, being the last one that coached Vienna to a championship. They signed Ben Finkelstein from Vienna, one of the very pleasant surprises last year. They've got one of the best German scorers with Nöbels. What's making Berlin so successful this year?
Well, they've always had the talent. And they have big budgets, but they manage their budgets properly. They don't run around spending it crazy like some teams do. But they have a lot of skill. And Serge and I were talking after the first time we played them. And I told him, I said, the big difference between your team this year versus last year is they're competing as hard as we compete. Difference is they got a ton of skill. And when you have skilled teams that compete like they're competing, and I'm expecting that tonight, it makes for a real tough game. So that's why we got to minimize our mistakes and capitalize on their mistakes when we get opportunities to score. But right now, Berlin they're in first place for a reason. They're the best team in the league. They play the right way. They play a very simple game, which I love, and it's very fast and not easy to play against.
Now, they were champions 2 years in a row, and last year had the classic year from hell. Didn't even make the playoffs, but they showed patience with the head coach, with the people in place. Does this make them even more dangerous as an organization because they don't clean house after a year from hell?
Yeah, I mean, because everybody knew that was a year that wasn't going to be repeated again this season. They won the championship back-to-back, which takes an awful lot out of your players going that long 2 years in a row. Then they had to jump right
into Tampa Bay.
Yeah, exactly. And then they jump right into the Champions League in August, so they're beat up from that. So you're bound to have a letdown, but man, oh man, they've regrouped and they're totally different. They're a better team now than they were those two teams that won the championship.
Interestingly enough, a lot of players with background in a multinational Winter Day Ice Hockey League are playing for the now second in the standings Fishtown Penguins, Bremerhaven, with Jan Obers, Miha Velic, Šiga Jeglić. All of them still going strong at advanced stages of their careers. So obviously Bremerhaven being a good soil for Slovenian players. Bremerhaven, one of the biggest surprises of the year? And if so, why?
They started out the same way last year. I think they are able to keep their core together. Obviously that big line that you just mentioned, their power play is very good. They get really good goaltending. And I think Tomas Popić is a really good coach. Very structured coach, you know exactly how they're going to play. And their atmosphere there with their players, I think, is very positive. Because I've seen Tomas a couple of times when we're walking out to the bench with him coming out in the locker room. He's high-fiving his guys. So I think his players love him. I think they really enjoy playing for him. And I think that's the biggest reason. I think the only thing that happens to them is their road trips are so long, like every road trip's 5, 6, 7 hours. I think that catches up with them sometimes at the end of the season, but they knocked us out of the playoffs last year and we never have easy games against each other. And I think both teams are fairly similar in how we approach the game. But I think that big line that they have is a key for how they perform.
Third and fourth in the standings. Two teams with head coaches who've got ties to the Austrian League too. Obviously, Mike Stewart with Wolfsburg, ran into him this summer. He's been a regular on the pod as well. So hi to Coach Stewart out there. And Tom Polko with Straubing Tigers won a championship in Austria too. Why are those two teams, if you look at the last couple of years, perennially on the top? And those are not the teams with the biggest budgets.
No, they don't, but they definitely have middle-of-the-road budgets and they can get some game-changing type players. But I think the biggest reason is they play them like, obviously, Stewie is big into the defensive side of the game, being very structured, being extremely hard to play against. I mean, we beat them in here and we played a really good game. They're coming back playing again here on Friday, so I don't expect the same type of game. He'll have them all revved up. But he makes sure they're in condition. Their conditioning is at a very high level. You know, there's no bones about it. So you better be in shape if you're going to play for Mike. And he's got his philosophy in place, and they play it to a T. And then you have Straubing, which is probably the direct opposite. I think Tom does a great job, but he plays more of an open style, high-end offensive, a lot of, you know, pace to their game, a lot of skilled players. They can throw the puck around pretty good. So you got one end of the spectrum with Stewie, who I think is similar to the way I coach. And then Tom is a little more freewheeling, and that's the type of guys they sign, the guys that like to go out and make plays. They're going to turn the puck over, but, you know, you better know what you're doing when you're defending against them because they can crush you pretty quick too.
He always had that freewheeling kind of system in place, and every time it works, it's marvelous to see, and it led him to a championship with Bolzano 11 years ago, actually. Yeah. No, 10 years ago. It's the 10-year anniversary in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League. You're going against all these great hockey minds, and everybody does his prep, but it's the prep on one hand, it's in-game adjustments on the other hand. Who's the toughest coach to go against?
Serge. Yeah, Serge is hard. You know, he's always looking to match lines, which I try and do sometimes. Sometimes it's you're really don't need to because the other teams have got four lines that could be first and second line on a lot of other teams. Now, Serge is difficult to coach against, and Stewie is very hard to coach against. So I would say those two guys are the most difficult because they're, you know, they're constantly making adjustments. They're constantly looking at what we're doing and things like that. So those would be the two tough ones.
Two more things that I want to tackle right here. And one team you've already mentioned is the one where your team has a mental block when it gets into their building. Adler Mannheim, one of the premier programs in the league, one of the most successful ones in league history, but with only one championship in the last 8 years, that's probably nagging a little bit when you ask Mannheim fans. Interestingly enough, their sports director, Jan-Axel Alavaga, he played his last year as a player, won a championship in Linz, so Austrian ties too. He built a big team. Mannheim, obviously an intimidating squad. What makes them, what makes it so intimidating to play them?
Well, a lot of times when you're playing them, you look at them and they have NHL size, okay? So that's one. Two, they can they play very structured, and they're playing a little different system this year under Johan, and it's more controlled like a Swedish team plays. And I think some of their guys are taking a little bit of time to get used to it. They're still having a good year, and I think at the end of the day, they will be one of the teams that are fighting to be in the finals. But to answer your question is they're big, they're strong, they protect the puck really well, they get the puck deep in your end, and they wear you down.
Two more teams that I want to talk about with ties to Austria, obviously the little brother, big brother, depending on how you see it, it's probably the big brother of Red Bull Salzburg, it's Red Bull Munich. You just played them on Sunday. You threw everything you had at them and competed very well for at very least two periods, and then the game got a little away, lost 5-3. Lots of well-known faces. Austin Ortega played in our league before. There's still Chris D'Souza, one... the scoring title in the Ice Hockey League, there's Philipp Vareika. So it's back and forth between those two organizations and also the closest DL team to the Austrian border. They're currently sitting outside the top six. How long until Munich re-enters the top six?
Well, they're starting to climb now. They beat us 5-3. They won, I think, Augsburg, beat Augsburg 5-1. You know, Tony Sutterholm, I think, does a really nice job coaching that team. But his style is a lot different than Donnie Jackson. You know, Donnie was very offensive-minded, wanted his players going all the time on the offensive side of things and really gave them a lot of freelance in the offensive zone. Tony comes out of the Finnish system, which is defense first, which makes an awful lot of sense. And they're not as aggressive as they were last year. But that being said, they're still incredibly difficult to play against because they just have so much skill and so much speed. But no, Mannheim, Berlin, obviously, Ingolstadt's struggling a little bit right now, but they got a really good club. I'm sure they're going to get going. But the league this year is just so much closer and tighter. Red Bull... I would say I'd be surprised if they're not in the top six within a couple of weeks.
There are 14 teams in the league from first to worst. The teams are only separated by 21 points. If you look at other leagues, the gap is way bigger in other leagues. But to close out our little chat about Red Bull Munich, how strange was it to look over to the opposing team's bench and not see Don Jackson there anymore?
Yeah, that was weird. I shot him a text when he officially retired. But yeah, it was definitely different. You know, Donnie's a great guy, probably one of the nicest guys in the business, and always has a kind word to say to everybody. But yeah, I think it's probably, like I said, it's probably a big adjustment for the players there because Donnie was there, 10 years, won a couple of championships. Players absolutely loved him. And again, two totally different styles of coaches with Tony in there. And I'm sure Tony's going to be as successful once he gets his philosophy fully ingrained in his players. But yeah, it was different not seeing Donnie.
interestingly enough, both Red Bull organizations switching or changing their coaches. Don Jackson retiring, Matt McElveen going on to the San Diego Gulls. The legacy Jackson is leaving behind. 9 championships in Germany. It's basically unheard of. And now an organization goes from his way of thinking hockey and playing hockey to a very structured Finnish kind of system. And you've probably seen it once or twice that organizations go, not against the grain, but philosophically go into a whole different direction. How long does it usually take for new systems, new approaches to really sink in?
I think about 15 to 20 games in this league, for sure. It's not only the systems, it's how the coach runs practices, how they work out in the gym, you know, what goes on behind the scenes. So all that definitely takes some time for the veteran players that were there to get adjusted to. But I would say 15 to 20. I mean, Munich is still, I think, an unbelievable team with the speed, the skill, and the way they play. I mean, they play the right way. We had an incident the other night where one of their guys cross-checked one of ours in the face.
Got suspended 3 games?
Yeah.
Only 3 games?
Yeah, you never see that. Yeah, I was shocked when I did see it. And I've told our guys a bunch that, in my opinion, Munich plays and Berlin play as professional as any team I've ever coached against. And they're all business. They play whistle to whistle. There's no shenanigans after the whistles with Berlin or with Red Bull. You know, they play a good, honest, hard game. And that's what I told our guys. That's what we're striving to be like.
Now we move on to the cellar dwellers. There was one connection to the Austrian League. And I mentioned the gap between the first and the 14th team in the standings. It's probably better to look at the first and the 12th with Ingolstadt, because then it's only a 15-point gap. There are two bottom dwellers with the Iserlohn Roosters and the Düsseldorf. Again, I can be candid here because I'm Austrian and I'm from the outside, or I'm looking in from the outside. But the past couple of years, the DL had its fair share of dumpster fires. It probably started with Krefeld and them switching or changing coaches, like some people would change their underwear. Last year it was Augsburg, who just didn't go down a league because no one wanted to come up. And now some people might say the torch has been passed to Iserlohn. And I know you have to be diplomatic here, and you can't really call another team or organization dumpster fire. But if you were looking for a dumpster fire, where in the German Hockey League would you start?
Yeah, well, Iserlohn went in with a philosophy that they wanted to play a lot of young guys and develop long term.
And I have to preface this: they were coached by Greg Poss,
yeah,
who used to be head coach in Salzburg too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a great philosophy if owners are going to give you the time to develop. So I think the idea was a good idea, and it still could work out with what they're thinking. Because I think a lot of teams looked at what we were doing here, playing all our young guys, and some of the teams that weren't high-end budget teams probably thought, you know what, maybe we should start playing some of our young guys a little bit more. So they brought in a lot of youth, and, you know, and as it goes with youth, you got to let them make their mistakes. And, you know, they just had a tough stretch, and then it just kind of spiraled from there. So when you're losing as much as they were losing, then the locker room gets a little cranky, and then anything can happen off of that. And that's the one thing we talked about here at camp. Regardless of what happens, we go on a 4 or 5 game losing streak, we're all coming in the next day with a positive attitude. And I told Stefan, I said, Stefan, it starts with you and me, because I said, you and me can probably be the two biggest idiots here getting too hard on guys when we don't win hockey games. And that has really helped us this year, because I've told the guys I'm not coming in a bad mood just because we lost the night before. The only thing I'll be upset about is if you don't compete as hard as you possibly can every night we've competed as hard as we can.
I'm sure listeners will have learned a lot by now about the German Hockey League. I want to round this out with two more things. We're only a couple of hours away from face-off anyways, and you've already had someone knock on your door, so you need to go. But as it's the first chance that I'm able to talk to someone about the horrific event that happened and took place on the weekend with the death of Adam Johnson, who died because he had got a skate to his neck, and one can only imagine what he, his family, the fans in the stands who had to see this, had to go through. How does an event like this shake you on a personal level? And how does it, I mean, we've seen the moments of silence and everything, but how did it shake you personally and the hockey organization that you're working for?
Yeah, I mean, I was really sad on the bus going to Red Bull the other day when I heard that. I mean, like no other injury that I've ever heard of before. It really, really upset me, as it did everybody, not just me. Even Usti, Stefan Ustorf came in, and him and I were in. He said, I haven't been able to even think about our game, thinking of what happened to that poor kid. It's shaking everybody, and it was a freak accident. I think it's probably happened twice in the last 25 or 30 years, but unfortunately, it was a real bad one in Nottingham, and unfortunately, Adam lost his life, which is terrible. So I'm hoping, and you do think of it, and I know players always think about it, but they don't ever talk about it. But now it's probably in the forefront of everybody's mind. And I know Stefan went out already and bought some neck protection, cut resistance underwear. And I think some of our guys are going to try it in practice and see how it feels. And I do hope the equipment manufacturers can come up with something so nothing like that happens again.
You've probably been as close to a full lot of unbelievably sad hockey tragedy when taking over Yaroslav Lefter after the plane crash. Now this Adam Johnson thing. We've seen serious injuries. We've seen people getting injured and being bound to a wheelchair because of playing hockey. No one ever hopes it's happening, but there's the tiny probability that it one day might happen while you are coaching on the bench or while you are guiding people through practice. Is there ever anything that might make you prepare for this, or how you know it might happen? Again, tiny probability. You're hoping it's not happening, mm-hmm. But what happens if it does? If yeah. Tragedy indeed strikes?
Well, I think you have to have a good medical staff. I mean, we have Thomas Shinko here, who was a former player but went to school to learn how to be a physio. He's tremendous. Does an unbelievable job. So, number one, you better have at least one very certified medical trainer on your staff. I know this will never happen, but I wish it would happen. When you have practice, it would be great if teams could afford to have a medical, like paramedics, on site in case something bad happened. Like, because that can happen in practice too, and especially in practice because you're some days running a lot of contact drills, battle drills, and guys fall, and you know, God forbid, a skate comes up and clips somebody like it did Adam. So I've always thought having at least one, I would love to have two full-time medical people on staff and one on the bench at all times. And then as a backup to that, it'd be great. And I know expenses being what they are, it probably won't happen, but if you could ever have two paramedics on site for every practice, I think that would help tremendously.
Kind of difficult to turn the corner on this very sad topic to something that, again, brings a lot of joys to our lives. And as I've mentioned previously, you've been guesting on this podcast a lot of times, educating listeners about the National Hockey League. How have you been following the current campaign so far?
Yeah, I watch all the highlights as much as I can. And Stefan and I were just talking the other day what these young kids can do at full speed with the skill, the passing, beating people one-on-one, watching Connor Bedard shoot a puck, and how fast it comes off his stick is unbelievable. I really do marvel at how great these hockey players have become, and not only with their skills on the ice, but the conditioning. You know, you see a National Hockey League player and he is in grade A condition, at least the majority of them are, and how they take care of themselves. So, you know, I love watching it. I think it's the best league in the world, obviously. And if you're a hockey fan in Europe, you get an awful lot of good players to watch. And every team has got some great hockey players.
Biggest, most interesting, most fun storyline of the year so far?
Oh, biggest, most, well, not in our league, but Connor Bedard. I love watching that kid. He's for me, I get up every morning to see if he scored the night before because I want to watch the highlights. And then we come in here and
he did yesterday, but I guess that's a game he wants to forget very fast.
But, you know, in Arizona, they're a heck of a team to watch now, too, and they've built it the right way. But, yeah, for me, he's the talk of hockey right now because he's 18 years old. He's in phenomenal shape. He handles himself off the ice like a 10-year veteran in the National Hockey League. So, yeah, that's the moment.
And just the interesting fact is, I mean, Anaheim losing out on the first overall pick again, just with the Crosby sweepstakes. What a difference would it have made for Connor Bedard to go from, or instead to a big market team like Chicago to a small market team in Anaheim? Because in Chicago, everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
In Anaheim, probably not.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't have, but I would think the league, I mean, they got such a phenomenal marketing arm in the league now. They would have made sure that people in California, and it could have been really good for the market, because even though they pay more attention probably to football and baseball and basketball out there, having a superstar like him would have done that market tremendous. Plus, Chicago's going in the right direction with some talent, but Anaheim already has it. They got a lot of young, talented players. So you put him with the Zegras kid. I mean, that could be some pretty fun hockey to watch. But yeah, you know, I mean, Chicago needed it probably because they're where their franchise was, especially after the fiasco they had with the sexual assault case there. But you know what? He's in a great place. He's playing for an original six, and that building's full again.
I know at least a dozen different things and teams could make it, but at gunpoint right now, give me your Stanley Cup pairings for the finals.
God.
Yeah, difficult questions here. But you're used to it.
Yeah, I would have to say Vegas in the West again if they keep doing what they're doing. And in the East, whew.
So deep. I mean, just looking at the Atlantic Division, it's like...
Oh, it's crazy. You got the Rangers, you got... I don't think Tampa Bay will be there this year, but you got the Rangers, you got New Jersey, Carolina. Everybody's picking Carolina to be there in the finals. I mean, and I read a couple of articles, a couple of players themselves even said, my God, the East is stacked. And I don't think anybody really knows, to be honest with you. But I will give you a team. I do think New Jersey could do it.
Very interesting if that indeed happens. But I guess once we start approaching the Stanley Cup Finals, we will have heard from you here again. So thank you so much for doing this. On a game day, right before it gets interesting against the Eisbären Berlin, wishing you all the best for the game. Thanks so much for, again, jumping on Winter Day Hockey Club.
My pleasure, and it's always a pleasure talking to you, Martin. And say hello to all my friends in Austria.
Winter Day Hockey Club.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move, another nice move. Oh, he scores!